Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Corulla. We're going to jump right in. We got a very special guest. I'm very excited to interview singer, songwriter, artist, Maurice Smith. Say hello, Maurice.
Oh, what's going on, everybody? How you feeling?
Oh, our studio audience loves you. There you go. See that? Just like that. They can come in and come out.
The crowd goes wild.
The crowd goes wild. Maurice. I love that name, by the way, man. You gotta have soul if you have a name like Maurice.
It's crazy. Everybody always goes to the song or Maurice White. It's like that's always the go-to joke.
That's not a bad source of
it's
music.
Not a bad source.
So let me ask you this: who were you named after?
I absolutely have no idea. Okay. I think my parents just had 9 kids and they just was throwing names out there.
That's a good name. They gave you one of the best names. I'm telling you, Maurice is a good name, man. So where are you from?
I'm originally from Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi.
You're from the heart of Jackson. You're from the real heart of Mississippi.
Yeah, the heart of Mississippi.
That's where a lot of songs have been written, man.
Man, that's where American modern music starts from in Mississippi. It's a great place to grow up and just like come up as an artist.
So did you start singing with family, friends, church, all the above?
Man, really start singing with family because both sides of my family were big musicians. My mom was a clarinet player.
Wow.
Clarinet or flute player.
I played the clarinet.
Yeah.
I bet she could school me, though. I was terrible.
I don't think my mom has picked that thing up since college.
You never know. You know what? Right. She could be just jamming away. Playing some Benny Goodman, man.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. Them, like all her brothers were drummers. She had 3 brothers. All three of them were drummers. And then my granddad was my first real music teacher. So.
What did he play?
He was a singer. Wow. He plays harmonica and, you know, just sings. And so he just really just taught us growing up. Like, he would just sit me and my brothers down, not knowing what we were doing, and just sit us down doing harmony sessions and everything.
That's awesome. How old are you?
I am 38.
Well, how old were you when you were doing that?
Let's see. When I was doing that, let's say... at least like 3 or 4.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were learning like 3-part harmonies at 3 or 4?
That's crazy. At 3-4 years old, learning that.
That's amazing.
Man, it was crazy.
So do you remember like the first records that were playing in the house? Do you remember like the first thing made you go, I want to do this?
Well, we come from a very strong like Christian background.
Right.
So
are you Baptist?
No, Pentecostal.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So growing up, all we really got to listen to was gospel. So my dad's like favorite groups growing up were the Winans, Commission, the Hawkins family, like all of that. So that's
all the traditional, but also very well done.
Very well done. Yeah. Very well done. So that's what we grew up listening to. Like a lot of the Winans, a lot of the
dude. Some of that stuff is the most heavy hitting, soulful arrangements, great mixes. The most incredible stuff.
Marvin Winans has to be one of the greatest voices in like just modern music ever. Like he just has one of the greatest voices to me.
And they always play with the like tightest bands.
Always. And it's amazing because, you know, like Andrew Goucher was playing on those albums like back in the day, and then getting the chance to come out here to LA and play with guys like that, it was amazing to me.
So let me ask you, did you have like choir in school? Did you do any musicals or?
Yeah, we actually had our middle school had a teacher by the name of Ms. Robinson. Our schools were very, very heavy on like the choir programs and the music programs.
Dope.
And so I had her as my music teacher, and then I went to high school.
You were tenor one?
Tenor one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I went to high school. My co-director was Mr. Hawkins. Our choir was like one of the most sought after like high school choirs the world. So we went to Vienna.
Wow.
The year prior to me getting there, they sung at Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
Yeah. So basically it was one of the most prestigious like high school choirs in the country.
What was the name of the high school?
Jim Hill High School.
Okay.
And the crazy thing is like the school is in the middle of the hood. Like everybody from the school, like it was a strange mixture. Like, have you ever heard of the IB program?
Yeah.
So our school was the only school in the state with the IB program. So you had a lot of the like academic people coming to the school, and then you had a lot of the kids from the inner city, like from around the school at coming here. And so a lot of those kids were, you know, no single parent homes and all of that, like kids that were homeless, selling drugs. They were in the choir.
Wow.
And it's just, and
you just gave me chills.
Yeah.
Dude.
And it's
you
just like, it was so amazing how it all came together. Like just so many different backgrounds that just came into this.
That's
choir.
The power of music, man.
Man,
especially in neighborhoods like that. It's like I find it to be the richest.
Yeah.
In talent, in like just sound and heart. The things that matter.
You know exactly. What I mean? Like, I mean, because that's where the passion comes from. Like the passion of music comes from struggle.
Yep.
So struggle and heartbreak. And so you had all of that, like from all those different backgrounds from the students. So it was.
How many people were in the choir total?
I think around that time we probably had about 50 to 75
wow.
students in the choir.
That must have sounded amazing.
Yeah. And so we traveled a lot with the choir. So it was amazing.
And what kind of arrangements would you do? Gospel, jazz? Did you do any jazz?
No, we did like traditional Moses Hogan. We
okay.
did a lot of Moses Hogan. So what would you call that? I forget.
It's kind of gospel-y. It's
yeah.
kind of, it's a gospel vibe.
Yeah.
It's almost like gospel pop.
Right.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of that growing up. So we did a lot of arrangements of the men's quartet. We did a lot of Boyz II Men and stuff
awesome.
Like that.
Really?
Yeah,
dude, you basically had the high school experience that I wish I had. That's nuts.
Yeah,
That's
it was like a lot of fun.
What arrangements did you do for the Boyz II Men stuff?
We did the Boyz II Men version of In the Still of the Night.
I love that. I know that one.
That was one of the big ones.
You do It's So Hard to Say Goodbye. That's another good one.
You know what? Now that I think about it, we did that. But the In the Still of the Night was the biggest one that we would do everywhere. Like wherever the choir would go, the quartet would always come out. We would always do that song. And the choir director, he was hilarious. Mr. Hawkins was hilarious. He knew exactly how to pull it out of you. He was like, Maurice, you see all those women out there? They're like, just get them.
And were you a tenor one in that? You know, I've got an a cappella group. I'm going to have you start singing with us, man. Do you miss singing in a quartet like that?
Yeah, I actually do miss singing in that setting because
there's nothing like it, man.
It's a pure form. No instrumentation. It's just you and your voices. So that was actually a lot of fun, and it actually taught you a lot about control. Like a lot of people ask me how I have such control over my voice. It just is that upbringing. Like, 'cause I didn't grow up singing gospel. Like, I didn't grow up singing in church. Right? So I didn't learn all of that, you know, all of the runs and everybody that everybody does and over singing. Like,
dude, I'm so glad you just said that because most people don't know what over singing is.
Ah, man, it's
everywhere.
It's everywhere.
I know
now,
you hear
right?
it. It's the fact that you even said that, like, it's so funny because like my girlfriend hears me say that all the time. She's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "These people are over singing. Like, man, people don't hear it. People don't hear it."
It's a big problem because the average consumer of music can't follow that.
Right.
Like, you're listening to music, like, you want to be able to sing along with the record, right. sing along right. with the artist. And once you start doing all those runs and everything, it's like they get lost.
Right.
It's like they just want to hear the song. And I look at people when I'm performing, and it's like you make the hairs on their neck stand up just by a simple sustained note.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
that's a sign of a good singer. I always say that.
Yeah.
You can hold one note and move somebody, you got the gift.
Yeah, I heard somebody say before that most of the time singers do that because they're afraid of their own voice.
Really?
Yeah, they're afraid of their own voice because they can't sustain a note. Like, a lot of singers don't know how to breathe. Like,
yeah,
that's true. So it's like you start running because you can't sustain that note because you're losing.
Well, it's also a lot of people start running before they walk. You know, it's like,
yeah, it's true.
And you know what? My favorite singers are the ones that's like, you can do the runs, you can do the licks, and it's like you're not thinking about it. It's
right.
It's not like coursed. It's like just, it's free flowing.
Exactly. It's part of the song. It's like, because I would study, like growing up, I would study like Al Green.
Oh, yeah.
And if you watch Al Green in a live show, he's so far away from the mic, but he's still controlling it. And everybody is just at his command.
In the palm of his hand.
In his palm. He's just sustaining notes. No runs, just sustaining notes. And it's like the crowd is just mesmerized by his shows. Like, it's amazing how he does that.
You know what? Ray Charles is like that for me too.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'll just sing something and it won't even be flashy. It'll just be something. It'll be like a growl or something. It's just like, oh my god, it just hits me in this place. It's just like, where is that coming from? I love it.
You it's just simple stuff like that that has the crowd just gravitates towards you. It's amazing to me. It's like singers like that, like Al Green and Marvin Gaye, like that could command a crowd like that.
Right.
It's just amazing to me, and I've always been intrigued by that.
So was he the first singer that made you stop in your tracks?
Man, the first singer that made me stop in my tracks, I would say, was Fred Hammett, actually.
Okay.
Like, Fred Hammett and the other singer from Commission, Mitchell. You know Mitchell from the group?
Like, I don't know their names, but I know.
So
I know
Mitchell voices. Mitchell was the tenor in Commission, and he just had one of the smoothest voices especially for gospel.
Was he tenor one or was he tenor two?
He was a tenor. I think he was a tenor. Tenor one.
Okay.
Tenor one. But he was just so smooth, and for that type of voice in gospel, you had never heard that. Like, because everything in gospel was like so strong.
Right.
Like,
right. Right.
So just him, like Mitchell just had the smoothest voice for gospel. It was like that was probably the first voices in music that I was like, wow.
Look, this is the real deal,
right.
man.
Like, man, I want to sound like that.
Yeah. Michael Jackson for me was definitely one of the first voices that I was just like, when he was a kid, when he was an adult, it didn't matter. But I was just like, God, he could sing anything, anywhere, in any era, and it was just slamming.
Yeah, like, see, I didn't really get into, like, because of my parents, like, we were all listening to gospel, like, we didn't really get to, like, grow up with Prince, Michael Jackson,
right.
We didn't really get to grow up on that. So like, that wasn't a part of my early, like my early music development. So it was like, for me, like I said, it was Mitchell, Fred Hammett, and Marvin Wines.
The man too, man.
Yeah. All of that. See, all of that came later. Like, see, but by the time Boyz II Men came on the scene, I was in high school.
Right.
So I was able to kind of get away and sneak and listen to some of that stuff. And then coming up, like my uncle, my mom's younger brother, like he he was still staying at home when we were growing up, because he was much younger than my mom and her other siblings. And so he had this big collection of tapes, and we would just go in there, close the door when we would go visit our grandmother, close the door and just pop in the tapes and just start listening to all the stuff that he had in there. It's like, it just opened up a whole new world.
Well, it's amazing when you can find music like that that yeah. moves you, because it's just like, time stands still, man.
Man, it really does.
Like, oh my God, what is this? This is crazy.
Man, that's how I felt. It was crazy. I remember the first time I heard that Milli Vanilli track. He had the tapes in his room, and I popped that in. I was like, man, this is actually like
slamming.
This was really good. I'm like, and then years later comes out that they weren't singing. I'm like, oh man, but
you
still,
hear, you want to hear something crazy? So I sang at the Grammys and met Milli Vanilli the year they were on. And I watched the rehearsal, and I watched them sing to a track. And I remember talking to somebody, and I was like, oh, I didn't know they sang to a track. He's like, oh, they all do that. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, a lot of them do that.
Yeah.
You know, like some technician was like, and then they came out, and they didn't even sing a lick on the tracks. It was like, but dude, those tracks were burning, man.
Yeah,
blame those it on tracks the rain. Were, blame man. It on the rain, man.
I still remember the intro. Like, that intro to that song was just like, all will forever be etched in my head.
The little conversation.
Yeah, the little conversation. Like,
or, girl, you know it's true.
Exactly. So what are you doing back?
That's right.
Well, I sat back and thought about the things you... Like, that will forever be etched in my head.
I never would have thought that would we be talking about that tonight. But it's true, man. It's true.
Yeah,
it's true. That was some serious... You know, it's amazing because that era of, you know, it was like New Jack Swing.
Yeah.
All that stuff was so happening, man.
Man, it was such a... It was such a great era.
Yes,
like,
for, I totally agree.
Like,
totally
you had, agree. Like... Teddy Riley was just, man, just riffing it back then.
Jodeci. I actually discovered lately, because of Jodeci, not Stevie Wonder. And I remember hearing Jodeci do it. And then I heard Stevie do it. And I was like, oh, man, this is no, crazy.
I discovered, what's the... I have never been so much LTD song. So I actually discovered that one from Jodeci before I heard the LTD version. It's like,
did you ever listen to like Shy and what are those? There were all these R&B groups in the 90s.
See, I wasn't really a big fan of Shy back then. I was more like, back then I was listening to like the adult contemporary artists, Babyface, Anita Baker.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's,
you were ahead of your own time.
Yeah, that's the stuff I was listening to. So like, I would like that was like how I developed as a songwriter, because I would listen to Babyface, like anything that Babyface wrote, I would listen to.
Can I see you? And
that's, man,
great track.
That
great track.
I would write out the lyrics to the song and just have my own little concert in my room, just singing along with those tracks.
Greatest. I've always wanted to hear him sing live.
I heard him at the Pasadena, when it was the Pasadena Jazz Fest.
Right.
I saw him there. And that dude has like one of the most purest voices. It's like he sounds exactly like the record. It's like if you would listen to the record on the way to the venue and then just listen to him, you would think that you're still listening to the album.
Crazy.
It's like.
Like butter.
Yeah.
Like butter.
It's like you, and those type of singers are so hard to come by.
Right.
Because, you know, you get into the studio, you get your studio magic on your voice.
Right.
It's like, but
when
him,
you hear like a Babyface, Brian McKnight's
Brian
one of those,
McKnight is one,
he's one
too.
Of the best, man.
Man. Brian McKnight is actually, Brian McKnight was my favorite singer growing up.
Okay.
Like,
now we're getting into the nitty gritty.
All right. That was my favorite singer growing up.
I hear an influence.
I listened
for sure.
to him from my brother, my older brother started listening to him first. And so, like, everything that my brother would listen to, like, I would gravitate towards it.
Right.
Because, you know, you could look it up
yeah,
to
of
your
course.
Older brother.
Yeah, of course.
So, I grabbed onto Brian McKnight, and I just fell in love with his voice, man.
He's like one of the most underrated singers, I think.
The most underrated artist ever to me.
I agree.
Like, he's so talented, writing wise, playing wise, and singing wise.
Yep.
Like, It was just amazing listening
to him.
He's
one of the voices, along with Babyface, that I've been waiting to hear live.
Yeah.
I would kill to see Brian McKnight live.
Yeah, I saw him at the Pasadena Fest, too.
What?
Yeah, it was just him and the piano. Him and the piano, and he captivated everybody for, like, his whole set.
That's crazy.
it was great to hear. I actually saw him at a more intimate setting at B.B. King's. You remember when B.B.
Yeah.
King's was at...
I used to play there all the time.
Yeah. So I saw him there, too.
Wow.
It was great. When he was hosting with... they came down there and was promoting when he was doing the show with the... what's the radio show?
Kiss FM? Was it Kiss FM?
No, The Wave.
Okay.
He was doing the show with The Wave. So they came down there and was promoting it. And he did one last cry at the show. Yeah. I was like, man.
You're like, this is it.
This guy.
So let me ask you this. You graduate high school. Did you go to music school? Did you want to move out to LA? When did you come out here?
I graduated high school, went to college. I actually was a business major.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because my whole thing, I've always been a business person, like business-minded first. Like, I've always been that way.
That's good.
Like, my goals as a kid, I wanted to be an ad agent. Like, I wanted to be a marketing manager.
Wow.
Yeah.
So well, took a real left turn, man.
I mean, it was still creative.
Right,
like,
of course.
Like, that was what I really wanted to do. So I graduated college and moved out here.
Where'd you go to school?
Jackson State University.
Okay, all right.
Yep. So I moved out here like the summer after I graduated. Let me see. I graduated this summer, and so that was like August, and then I moved out here that January.
What was you were like, I'm going to L.A.? Had you been to L.A. before?
I had never been to L.A.
Wow.
So it's like a couple things. Like, so my best friend I was working with, like, he went to Jackson State with me. He's from Mississippi. We were working together on music, and he wanted to come out here because he has family out here. So, I mean, I was like, I don't know. Like, I really wanted to go to New York. Like, that was my goal. Yeah, that was, I really wanted to go to New York because, you know, all the ad agencies were in New York.
Right.
So I was like, nah, I really want to go to New York and just be out there. But he was like, nah, come out to L.A. I was like, I'll think about it because I have family out here, too. So, like, my family that's out here, like, we would see them probably, like, once every 2 years. So I was like, it would be great. Like, to see them, like, to you know, to be around them and then, you know, come up with them and grow up with them a little bit. So that was still, I was like, 50-50, I'll think about it. And so I interviewed for a job as a marketing manager, and the job was based in Mississippi, but they hired someone else. So, but the guy told me, he was like, well, I have a position in California.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was like, if you go to California and interview for it again out there, you know, like, we'll talk about bringing you on. So after that conversation with him, I was like, okay, maybe that's the move to make. So we drove out here in January, and that's what I did. I was a marketing manager for, like,
that's crazy. Yeah. I didn't know any of this.
Yeah, I was music. I mean, I was like, okay, I'll do music, but my mind was focused on, like, getting into the business side of things.
And then what was the turn?
George Bush.
Right.
I mean, you know, I was still doing music here and there. Like, we were, me and my boy, we were still recording. We were writing, going to jam sessions and everything, doing shows. But, like, the focus was still business. And then the economy took the turn.
Right.
And
2008.
Like, yeah, 2008 was that year. It's like, man, okay, I'm sitting at home, like, okay, looking for jobs, like, nobody is hiring in marketing at the time. So I was like, man,
isn't it funny how it just trickles down?
Yeah.
Like, Washington never has to worry. For some reason, they're always taken care of.
Always taken care of.
Everything, every choice they made trickles down to, like, hardworking people that are just like, yo,
yep,
this is what I'm trying to do.
And the crazy thing about it is that, Before the economic downturn, you remember we had the writer strike.
Yeah.
So like that writer strike, it kind of closed down a lot of the clubs. Like a lot of the clubs that we were playing at out here, you know, closed down because, you know, everything is built around the entertainment industry.
Yeah, totally.
So that affected us, and then the economic downturn. So it's like, ah, man. So what are we gonna do now? So I was like, man, I might as well just dive in full time to this music, and I've been doing it ever since.
Man, you know what? We met at Mike Aiea's memorial, and which was a very sad event. But I'll tell you, I heard you sing two, maybe three notes. It was, I think it was "Do I Do," Stevie Wonder. I know it was a Stevie Wonder tune. I'm pretty sure it was either that. No, I'm pretty sure it was "Do I Do," and you sang three notes. And I was just like, holy shit, who is that, dude? And I remember walking up to you, I was like, yo, man, what's your name, dude? And you were like, Maurice Smith, man. I'm like, I'm getting your number right now. We're going to work on music. Yo, we'll talk soon, and we're just going to make music. But, dude, seriously, I hear a ton of singers in this city. You know, it is an entertainment city. And you are definitely one of the best singers I've heard in this city.
Oh, man.
And I want to play a track. What are we playing first?
Let's see. We're going to play One Kiss first. This is from my first, that's from my first EP, the first single I put out.
What year did you put it out?
Man, I think I put this out in 2013, 2014, I believe.
All right. Here's Maurice Smith with One Kiss.
What if I kiss you again, give you my hand, go back again, to make love all over again? What if I kiss you again, give you my hand, go back again, to make love all over again? Back, toes curled, so close, our souls begin to swirl. Soft whispers fill the air as I run my fingers through your hair. You're right there. This will remember to way back when. Opportunity for this to be. From your neck to your soul, soul to your toes, we're the only thing that matters. Your tongue and your lips touch my fingertips, a sensual set hard to miss. Your right remembers way back when.
Dude. So slamming.
Oh, man, appreciate it.
Grooving. So yeah. Tell me about the inspiration. I know it's a love song, obviously, but tell me the story.
Man, so during that time when I wrote this song, I didn't actually write this one. I wrote the chorus for it, but my friend Kendra Robinson, she wrote this as a poem, and she sent it to me, and I was reading it. I was like, man, I could turn this into a song. So I produced this at the house. I'm not a producer,
Anything. Absolutely, you are. You just said it the first line. You said I produced this at my house.
Yeah, I produced it, and then I had my guy Rick Marcel, who played guitar and bass on this. He came and laid down the bass line over it, and it just woke the song up.
Right.
It's like, wow, okay, we can actually do something with this. Then I sent it to Carnell, who played keys and strings on it. And then Gordon Campbell played drums, and it's like, it just came alive.
It just sounds like butter the whole way through.
Man, appreciate
it. It's just smooth, and its harmonies are locked, and it just has a vibe, and you can just hear it keep opening up. That's what I love about songs in this style, too. It's like, you can just hear it go on and on and on, and it just keeps on opening up with more sounds and layers.
Yeah, know? And I during that time when I wrote this, when I arranged this, I was very heavy into Marvin Gaye at that time.
Yeah.
So it was like I was even trying to like embody everything about Marvin Gaye at the time. So I was like, I grew my beard out, you know, I was wearing the beanie. I was like, I'm gonna embody everything Marvin Gaye and just try to capture the feeling and the spirit of Marvin into this track. And so
you got it. You did it, man.
Yeah, and it's crazy because I had never told this story before we released it, and like everybody that reviewed it was like, it just embodies the spirit of Marvin. It was like,
and you're like, man. Yes.
Like,
that's
I did
it.
The job.
How many harmonies did you do? Do you remember? Man. I mean, I know you did like at least three.
That's four part harmony on that. So I did. So when I record my harmonies, or when I was recording those, I was doing four tracks each.
Oh, nice. That's like Barry Gibb style.
Yeah. Man. So, yeah.
Four do you do them all same level, or do you do like one and then two or three, maybe in lower, like lighter tones?
I would do pretty much all of them in at the same level. And then I would do like four tracks of like singing it very airy,
the
whisper style.
Oh man, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, my boy taught me how to actually like record, because like when we moved out here, he was living in Northridge and I was living in Ontario, so it's like we couldn't get together a lot. So I got my laptop. I got the M audio box and everything.
Yep.
And so it was like, okay, this is what you do. This is how you record it. And so
isn't that such a great tool though?
Yeah. It was like
when you learn that, it's like, oh, all right.
Yeah. I was like, man, you didn't tell me this. I don't need anybody. I don't need to wait on anybody else again. It's like,
that's the best tool somebody could teach. Man. I remember discovering that, and it was like, oh man, I'm going to just do this all the time.
Yep. It's like, I'm not waiting on anybody. I'm like, I'll call you. If we can't get together, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to work on myself. So that whole EP, my first EP, I produced everything myself.
Wow.
And so I think it was like five songs in there. I produced all five songs.
It's such an undertaking doing any kind of group of songs.
I mean, it really is. And I made so many mistakes on that.
You know what? I'll tell you this. I tend to keep making the mistakes, but I tend to leave more on records now.
Yeah, like that, all everything, like that track, the One Kiss. So when I had the bass player Rick record the bass, I forgot to turn the click track on. So I completely forgot to turn the click track on. So he's just playing, and it's not on any type of grid or anything.
Wow.
And so I sent it to Gordon. Who was playing the drums, he was like, man, this is like, what tempo is it? I was like, man, you know, I just completely
like,
forgot to
I
turn
forgot.
I forgot to turn the click track on. So he's just playing. So he caught it, and it's still like, it's still one of those grooving songs that everybody really still loves that song to this day.
I don't want music to be perfect.
Yeah, it's not perfect. And music is imperfection.
Yeah, and it's like when it's breathing.
Yeah.
It's when it is imperfect and it's got ebbs and flows. So I find that like my first record was probably the most clean and perfect record to be. And it's my least favorite because there's no personality. There's none of that.
It's life. Technical.
Yeah, it's just clean. It's
yeah.
I want it to be, human.
Yeah, you know? And I try to stay away. Like anytime I'm doing music, I try to stay away from technical. Like I try to stay away from the technical and right. clean stuff.
Yeah.
Like music is not meant to be perfect.
Yes.
It's
yes.
not meant to be perfect at all. So it's like, I was telling you earlier, like in my shows, like we come with no plan. We just start a song and we just play.
That's
we
awesome.
Just play for 2 hours and just figure it out on the way. It's
that's
like,
crazy. So you must be good with lyrics then. Or I mean, you're looking stuff up on your phone.
No, I look up. I keep my iPad with me on the show. It's like, because I look at it as like, because I grew up playing sports.
Right.
And so like my dad.
It's like your playbook.
Like, yeah, it's my playbook. And so it's like, okay, I'm looking at like in between so like solos and everything while the band is taking solos. Like it can be one note or one sound that somebody plays.
It triggers
another song. So like, oh man, okay. And then you pull it up and just start singing it in the midst of a solo and they catch it. It's like, cool.
Yeah. I wish there was like an app of like just all songs. You know what I mean? Like any song of just all the lyrics.
Google.
I mean, that's what I use. But you know, sometimes you'll click on it and it'll be some whack version. It's like, you know, it's not edited. It's not.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Like what are these words?
Yeah, I don't want to go through four websites on Google to find the lyrics that I need. Yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's like I'm always amazed when singers do exactly that, when they're just like, they're looking through lyrics and they're just like, okay, I can do it. Let's go.
Yeah.
Because, man, I'm always like, I need to rehearse that.
I need
to make sure. Okay, all right. Let's play another track. What are we going to play next?
Let's play Can't Fight the Feeling. That's one of the singles from the last EP I did, Delta Soul. Man, it's a very Motown-ish Curtis Mayfield track.
Love it already, man. Say no more. Here it is. Maurice Smith, Can't Fight the Feeling.
Her lips up as a breeze on a warm spring afternoon. She uses to kiss me slow and manipulate my soul. She stares into my eyes, knowing that she's got me hypnotized. Never had a chance from the moment that she took my hand. She just chills through my body when she whispers in my ear, telling me how bad she wants and needs me. Man, she's so sincere. Can't seem to shake the spell this woman's put on me. Only thing that kills me is when I'm in a sweet embrace. And I'm a one and only man. She's got my love wrapped like a cocoon, waiting to birth a sweet butterfly. Gotta admit, she's got me sprung out that I can't deny. Never thought I'd see fireworks, stars, or rainbows when I kissed into one. But Lord knows I see the cloud nine, everyone claims stand on. Can't seem to shake the spell this woman's put on me. Only thing that kills me is when I'm in a sweet embrace. And cover.
She gets good, good loving. I can't fight the feeling. Of a girl when I'm holding her hand, I can never let it go. She says I'm a one and only man. She's got my love wrapped like a cocoon, waiting to birth a sweet butterfly. God, I admit she's got me sprung out that I can't deny. She gives a good, good loving.
Dude, your music is so, so, so good. What year did you do that in?
We did that one in 2016.
Okay.
Yep, we released that one in 2016.
So you do what, an EP every 3 or 4 years?
I do an EP whenever I'm done.
Smart. That's a good answer.
Yeah, because the first EP, Private Use Only, I released that one like 2014. And then the label head, he came to me and he had the idea to do that track. He was like, "Man, like I really hear you doing like this Motown, you know, like this Northern Soul track."
Totally.
So we did that track, and it did so well. He was like, "Man, we should just record a whole EP of it." So we recorded a whole EP of just like Northern Soul, like Motown, like music, and so. Yeah, that was actually, I didn't actually plan that. So that was a great project.
Your voice sounds so good with R&B and it sounds so good with funk and soul, man.
Man.
And you know what? I don't use those words. Like, I'm saying it and it's a very high compliment because I don't say those words very often. But man, you sound like a throwback in the modern age. And those are the voices I'm always looking for.
Nah, I appreciate that. That just comes from like being a fan of music.
Right.
Like, you know, a lot of people get stuck into one genre that they listen to, but I listen to everything. I'll throw on some Meg Thee Stallion right now or some DaBaby, and then like a couple songs later I'm listening to Curtis Mayfield or Leon Bridges, and then listening to Michael Bublé the next like song. So it's like my interest in music is just it's just varies. Yeah. So it's like that comes from like just listening to everything and studying everything.
Well, I'm gonna ask you a nitty gritty question. You ready for this? What do you think of new artists now?
Man, I actually like a lot of the newer artists that are coming out right now.
All lies.
No, like right now you have a big renaissance with like neo soul, I guess you would say, like or just like soul music. You have a big renaissance going on right now with like Miguel. I think you could say Miguel started this trend, like started toward going back towards like neo soul music. Miguel, and then you have Daniel Caesar that came out. Daniel Caesar, and then her. Like, her is.
I love her, like, too.
She
man.
Is.
Dude,
man.
That's my girl, man.
She is, like.
Hard
the
Place?
Most,
I think that's.
Oh, man. That's Hard Place. That's the best part with her and Daniel Caesar. Like, it's just good music.
Yeah.
It's like they're taking us back to like just like good neo soul music. So I'm like, I really feel like it's like music is in a good place right now.
Well, but you know what? This is what I don't like. I'm gonna be honest. What I don't like is her should be as big as Billie Eilish.
Oh, I mean that's always gonna be.
But that is. The straight up truth.
Yeah.
I like Billie Eilish. She's cool. But you know what? Her plays all the instruments.
She plays everything.
She plays everything.
And is an amazing writer.
She sings her ass off.
And
writes her ass off.
She has such control over her voice. It's like, it's just amazing.
And that's what bums me out sometimes. It's like, it shouldn't be this kind of like, you know, I hate to say it, but like commercialized
Yeah.
Pop. And I say commercialize. You know, I'm thinking the same thing. You and I are thinking the same thing. But, you know, an artist like her comes around and there's not this tidal wave of popularity like.
Yeah, it's really not. It really hasn't been a big tidal wave around her, but.
But she's successful. Yeah, that makes me happy.
Yeah, she's successful. She's touring. And, and then we have. You listening to Harry Styles?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
His new record.
Yeah, oh my God.
I haven't heard a lot of tracks. I've heard like maybe two. They're great, dude.
Yeah, I listened to his whole album, and like I never knew who Harry Styles was. Like my friend told me he was in One Direction.
One Direction, right.
It's like I never really listened to One Direction outside of like their pop song, like their big hits. So I never knew who the individual members were, and then I heard this Harry Styles. I was like, man, this is some great music.
You know, the weird thing is I went to see Kacey Musgraves when she had her first, the record that won Album of the Year last year. And so I saw her first show and she was opening for Harry Styles. And it wasn't that great of a show.
Really?
It was like, I actually walked out. I was like, this is okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is because the music he was playing was very, it was just really, a little immature.
That's now
he's making records.
Hey, right. He's making like good soul music now.
Yeah.
But a lot of the only thing, like only issue I have with like a lot of the newer music now, or a lot of the newer singers outside of like Daniel Caesar and her, is that like their music is great, like it's great for like an intimate home setting, but then when they try to do it live, it doesn't translate because it's just so soft and like they're not able to like. Pick it up and put energy into it because it's just so like it's just so soft and intimate. So it's like that's the only issue like that I would say I have with some of the newer music right now.
I'd love that you were honest because that's so much a part of it. I want to play something else. What are we playing next? Yours?
Yes, Yours is a track that I wrote with an amazing producer, drummer, Asa Watkins. He's out of Chicago, and it just speaks to the diversity of the music that I listen to. So we did like a soul house track.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so it's a dance track. Yeah, Yours.
Here's Yours.
Take it slow.
So good. So good. That's like a modern day Stevie Wonder song. What was the Stevie Wonder song we were talking about?
Another Star.
Another Star. That's right. Man, that was so slamming. Maurice, where can people find you and when are you playing next so people can see you in LA?
Man, next I'm playing in LA is at 7 Grand. The last Wednesday of this month, we'll be there.
Are you there every month?
We're there pretty much like once a month, like okay. The last Wednesday of every month. And it's always just a good time. Like that's actually one of my favorite shows to play because we just really get to play. Like,
I need to come see you play there.
No, it's no holds barred. We just, like I said, we just start a vibe and just go.
And it's originals, covers, mix?
Covers.
All covers?
Yeah, all covers.
Yeah, slipping on original.
Yeah.
The originals are good.
And, I mean, the guy that books it, he's always like, man, you need to do some of your originals. I was like, yeah, I'm working on some new stuff right now. Right now, it's just we're going to focus on, you know.
Well, it's easy to call out a cover to cats. Too.
Exactly.
Right.
So, but no, everybody can keep up with me on my Instagram at SinginSense3. That's SINGIN. SINCE and a number 3.
Easy yeah. Breezy. And I love your posts, man. Your posts are on the reel, always on the reel, whether it's talking about the weather, hot sauce, politics. You know what? I don't read everybody's statuses. I read every single one of yours because I'm like, this cat is the real deal, dude. So keep on keeping on. Keep on being real with your music. Keep on sharing your soul. Keep on sharing your posts and your opinions. The world needs more people like you, Maurice. Maurice Smith, where can people find you one more time?
Find me on Instagram at SinginSense3, or you can check out my website, MauriceSmithMusic.com.
Spell it out one more time.
Maurice Smith Music, MauriceSmithMusic. And the Instagram is at SinginSense3, SINGINSINCE and a number 3.
All right. Maurice, thank you for being a guest. You're going to have to come back, man. We'll do our best to share your music as much as possible. On behalf of Ronan and myself, we'll see you guys here next week.